Without thinking about the question much, do you think most Utahns are in favor of or against medical marijuana? It might surprise you to learn that a bulk of Utahns, 75% according to a recent poll by the Salt Lake Tribune and the Hinckley Institute of Politics, are in favor of a ballot initiative sponsored by the Utah Patient Coalition that would give access to medical cannabis to people with qualifying illnesses, such as chronic pain, epilepsy, Crohn's disease, post-traumatic stress disorder, and cancer. Or maybe that didn't surprise you. Maybe you're curious to see what medical marijuana could do for people suffering from any number of ailments. Like Christy, who's been experiencing debilitating migraines 3 to 4 times a month for 25 years. For her, the option to legally try a marijuana product as a form of medication seems preferable to her current treatment plan.
My name's Christy, and I'm in my mid-40s somewhere, and I live in Salt Lake. I'm on an anti-epilepsy drug, and I'm on anti-inflammatories twice a day, prescription grade. And when the migraines occur, I take triptans, and the triptans are an oral medication, but I have some that I can squirt up my nose, and I also have some that I have to inject sometimes. So I take medication daily, and then I take medication when I get the migraines. So I'm on medication a lot, and I take different supplements to try and prevent them. And I also get monthly massages, and all of this adds up to a lot of effort and a lot of expense. When I get migraines, or sometimes the medication causes me anxiety, and so my doctor prescribes Xanax for me, and that just makes me tired. And not only does it just conk me out, which sometimes stops a migraine, but it also makes me tired for days sometimes, and it makes me not functioning, so then I can't work or perform the way I want to. And Xanax can be addictive, and so I'm not interested in taking it. I don't want to just go to sleep. So I'd like to try something that's more mild and less addictive. And I also think that it might be a better pain reliever than the opioids that I sometimes have to take when I get a migraine. Well, I think people are becoming more aware that a lot of medications are dangerous that we're relying on. People have chronic pain conditions like mine or chronic medical conditions, and we're just looking for answers. We're not trying to just get high. It would be nice if there was a way that we could safely maybe treat conditions like migraine, like anxiety, like chronic pain conditions. We're not trying to party. We just want a safe other option.
While proponents of the initiative work to gather the signatures of 113,143 registered voters by April to qualify for November's ballot, Representative Brad Daw, a Republican from Orem, is sponsoring multiple bills on medical cannabis this legislative session. I caught up with Daw in between hearings at the Capitol. Brad, thank you so much for joining me to talk about medical marijuana, which has been a topic of discussion at the Utah legislature for quite a few years now. But the conversation often becomes we don't have enough research. Last year, your bill funded a cannabinoid product board to review the studies that have already been done on medical marijuana. So I'm wondering what that review has turned up, if anything.
Well, actually, we made a bit of a mistake last year, and frankly, I know it's politicians aren't supposed to do this, but I want to own up when we don't do something quite right. And we limited the board to studying cannabidiol or low THC, 10-to-1 ratio product. And there really isn't a lot of research out there on that. And so what they came back with was, okay, here's a compendium from the National Academy of Sciences. They've reviewed 25,000 papers. Here's what they know. But we really need to be able to study any level of cannabis in order to do much more than that. So that's what the bill that I have this session does, is it expands their responsibility and the scope of it so that they can dig more into the kind of stuff we need them to dig into.
So it's not just cannabidiol, but also maybe THC that they'll be able to look at under this year's bill?
Any product from the marijuana plant.
Okay, well, I guess that really broadens the scope of things. Has that board been able to make a judgment on the effectiveness of medical marijuana for different illnesses or diseases?
Outside of the compendium that they presented, they haven't had a chance to really dig into it very much. So, no, not yet. You got to understand, they only started up, the bill passed in February. They've only had 2 or 3 meetings since then. So they're just really getting rolling.
So they're looking at some studies that have already been done, but has the state conducted its own research on medical marijuana?
There has been some. There's been some money given to the U of U to do a pain study. That's about $500,000. And that one is forthcoming. It'll be out sometime this year. So that's coming out. But we've also enabled other companies to do their own studies. And the only requirement is it has to be under an institutional review board. So there's been one company that's done it. And I will just right now on the air invite anybody out there who wants to do a study, please do so. It's not that hard. You do need an investment up front. But if you're interested in moving the dial and pushing our knowledge forward, please do a study. It's available here in the state. Let's get it done.
Well, Representative Daw, I think a lot of people have done some individual studies on this, but, you know, like in the comfort of their own home.
Kind of study.
Well, so there is the information out there, and we're learning more every day. But what has the legislature learned about medical marijuana through this process? How far along are we in our understanding?
I think we've got a lot of really interesting indications. We've seen some ways to really do it wrong by looking at other states. We want to follow a more scientific and medical approach here in Utah. We feel there is some genuine benefit. We want to get to that. We want to make sure that the right treatment gets to the right people. And so that's the track we're trying to take, is put those pieces in place so that we have broad acceptance by the medical community and we have product that we can comfortably call medicine.
Well, there have been, 29 states that have legalized the use of medical marijuana in some form or other. Can you maybe point to one or two that you think don't quite meet the standards that Utah is looking at?
Oh, gosh. Let's look at California. California has had medical cannabis for over 20 years. Now, show me how they've solved the opioid crisis. You can't, because they haven't. Show me all of the amazing cures and treatments coming out of California. There are none. In fact, what's happened in California, what it's devolved down to is you can go to Venice Beach, you can tell a pot doc there, hey, my back hurts or I can't sleep or whatever you want to tell them, and you got your cannabis available for smoking. So that's a really good example of how to do it wrong. And if we're going to do it right, then that means having a predictable, reliable source of medicine, which means we know what it is, we know what the contents are, we know what the profile is, we know the dosing, and we also know what it's good for, what it's indicated for, and what the side effects are and what the drug-to-drug interactions are. So those are the kind of things that we need to have in place in order for doctors to make informed decisions.
Well, let's talk about your other bill this year, your other marijuana bill, HB 195, which has kind of been dubbed the Right to Try bill. What are you hoping to accomplish with that?
Oh, great question. And if I could, I'm going to slip in a plug for HB 197, if you don't mind, because they're kind of companion bills. HB 197 is the bill authorizing the Department of Agriculture to grow or contract out grows for cannabis in the state, and that's full-strength cannabis, high THC, whatever strains make sense, whatever strains would be the right strains to try for different kinds of illnesses. So they're going to have that responsibility to grow it, produce it, convert it to a dosable form, and then the Right to Try bill says, okay, if somebody is diagnosed with a terminal illness and the doctor in his professional judgment feels like cannabis might help, that he can have access to that cannabis grown by the Department of Agriculture. So that's how it's going to work. And, you know, we've got a doctor in the legislature right now. I think he's pretty anxious to give it a try. That's Representative Redd. I think we've got it right.
Representative, why only for terminally ill patients? I mean, it's a pretty specific population. So what about other people suffering from any number of ailments that aren't terminal?
Great question. Now, we go with terminally ill because that's a population where it's easy to say that the reward, potential reward, outweighs any risk. That's an easy call to make. So that's why we go with that first, with a lot less oversight and control than we do for other situations. Now, for the others, what I would say, and again, I'll make the plea, set up an institutional review board-based study. Most people can get access. We just want to do it in a way that preserves patient safety and gives us scientific rigor. So the way is open. If people are willing to take it, it's not that hard. There is a way for everybody to have access that would have a legitimate need for it.
Well, I don't want to sound crass. I hope I don't come off that way. But we're still looking at the research into using medical marijuana as a treatment. Is this kind of using these terminally ill patients as test subjects, or what does that look like to you?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the fact is we're not requiring any tracking of their treatment. We would hope that doctors would kind of volunteer, hey, this is the population of patients I've treated, and here's the results I've seen. But we're not requiring that. We're just saying, hey, this is a population that could benefit, where the benefit outweighs the risk, so go ahead. But we're not trying to turn them into test subjects, if you will.
Okay. Well, let's talk about something I'm sure you enjoy talking about. There's a ballot initiative on the table this year. There are quite a few, actually, but one specifically pertaining to medical marijuana. If the ballot initiative passes and HB 195 also passes, what kind of effect would your bill have on the initiative, or vice versa? What are you foreseeing?
Well, I think that the fundamental problem there is you have a ballot initiative passing. To me, one of the major flaws of the initiative is now, instead of medically dosable forms, instead of something that's predictable and safe, now what you're doing, well, let me just walk you through the process, if I may. Under the initiative, you go to a doctor, you say you have some condition, and one of them is chronic pain. And a lot of people hear chronic pain, they think that means severe. It doesn't. Chronic pain just means you have some kind of pain over a long period of time. So you go to the doctor, you say, I got chronic pain. Doctor does not give you any kind of dosing information. He does not give you a treatment regimen. The doctor just gives you a card. And then you go to a dispensary. And in the dispensary, you're talking to what's been called a bud tender. And the bud tender says, okay, well, here, try this strain here. So you take your smokable bud home. Now, the initiative says you can't smoke it, but when you're in the privacy of your own home, there's really nobody to stop you from smoking it. And so, anyway, there's really not very much medical about it. And so it really undermines what we're trying to do, create this regimen of saying, if it's medicine, let's treat it like medicine, which means predictable dosing, understood conditions, and a safe supply. So the initiative would pretty much undermine what we're trying to do in this other direction.
That was Orem Republican Representative Brad Daw. Daw mentioned that there's limited research that's been done in the state on medical marijuana, but someone who is doing the research in Utah, Karen Wilcox, professor and chair of pharmacology and toxicology at the University of Utah. She also happens to be the chair of the Cannabinoid Product Board established by Daw's 2017 legislation. Recently, I met Wilcox at her lab, which focuses on understanding epilepsy and is testing the effects of cannabidiol on the disorder. But before we got to her own work, I wanted to know if we knew anything about the therapeutic effects of medical marijuana.
You know, I think one of the things I wanted to mention to you was that the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine came out with a very detailed report last year entitled The Health Effects of Cannabis and Cannabinoids. And they went through the literature and sort of took into account over 10,000 studies that had been published in the last 20 years or so, trying to understand what therapeutic benefits were available from different medical marijuana products or components of marijuana plant. So that's really what we're talking about when we talk about medical marijuana. We're really talking about compounds within the marijuana plant that, when extracted, can actually convey therapeutic benefit to a patient.
So we're talking about CBD. Are we talking about THC at this point?
Yes, we are. We're talking about CBD. We're talking about THC. There are a wide array of cannabidiol products that are in the marijuana plant as well, and different companies and groups are looking into the effect of those products as well. And so you'll probably be hearing more about the cannabidiol and some other things that are hard to pronounce on the radio. And to see what their effects are. But I think the report that came out by the National Academies were really very timely and very thoughtfully done. And they went systematically and looked at different disease states, whether it be epilepsy or neuropathic pain or nausea from cancer, and tried to assess the available literature to see whether or not there are real effects of CBD or THC or combinations thereof. And I think it's safe to say that certainly there are examples of medical marijuana products from the marijuana plant that show efficacy. So, for example, dronabinol is an FDA-approved drug that is a synthetic THC. And this drug is actually available and approved by the FDA for the treatment of appetite stimulation for patients with AIDS, and also to prevent nausea and vomiting in patients who are receiving chemotherapy for cancer. So that is already approved. That's available in the marketplace. And we know that there are some benefits and effects from that as well.
But this isn't just, I don't know, rolling up a joint and smoking it, right? There's more to it than that.
That's correct. Well, in the case of dronabinol, it is a capsule that one takes with a given dose for a prescription period of time and is well regulated in terms of how it's produced. And the FDA governs the safe practices of extracting it and the safe practices of generating it. And you know, there's a systematic process in place to know that what you're getting is what you're getting.
I guess it would be
from the pharmacy.
The same as with any drug.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, there have been 29 states to legalize medical marijuana in some form or other. Mm-hmm. It kind of varies state to state. Have those states done what you might consider the necessary research into these products?
Well, I think the jury is still out on a lot of the products for a lot of the disease states. I think that we do need a lot more scientific research to be done. Individual states, per se, are not doing a lot of research. But I think our universities and the pharmaceutical companies, for example, are doing a lot of basic research. One of the problems that we run into is, as investigators, is that products obtained from the marijuana plant, whether it's THC or cannabidiol, is very heavily regulated. And so there are Schedule I compounds, which means that they're very difficult for a basic investigator to receive the license to actually work with the substances. So there's a lot of research barriers in place that are bureaucratic that makes it very difficult for us as investigators to research the effects of CBD. So we have a faculty member who has a Schedule I license here, and she spends a lot of her time filling out a lot of paperwork to try to get permission to do the studies that we need to do in a preclinical setting. And is pretty much felt unanimously by many organizations, whether it's the American Epilepsy Society, the American Academy of Neurology, and other medical organizations, that if we could reschedule the extracts and the compounds from medical marijuana, then it would make it easier and reduce barriers to research. And so that's something that is pretty well recognized as something that would be helpful to get the research done.
So you're in this position where you're doing research on this already, mm-hmm. I imagine. But you're
yes.
also the chair of the Cannabinoid Product Research Board through the state, which was formed through legislation that Representative Brad Daw proposed in 2017, I think.
That's correct.
So part of your job there is to kind of review these different studies that mm-hmm. have been done. What have you been finding from looking at those?
Right. Well, what we find is that there have been a lot of studies done. The rigor with which some of those studies have been done is variable. The experimental designs are sometimes more rigorous than others. And what we like to see in science is that when giving a investigational compound or drug to a patient, that those studies are double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trials. There aren't a lot of those. And part of it is because of the research barriers. Part of it is funding issues. And certainly, you know, more funding is required at many levels to get some of these studies actually performed. So the level of evidence that you get from some of the trials or some of the studies is not maybe as rigorous as you'd like to see from a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial. However, those are starting to come out now. And so within the epilepsy field, we're very excited because there is a compound, Epidiolex, which is an extract of cannabidiol, has been looked at for the use of treating children with epilepsy. And those trials were recently published in several manuscripts and peer-reviewed journals and double-blind, placebo-controlled, randomized trials. And the outcomes of those studies were very promising. So some children had their seizures in some cases controlled pretty fully. In some cases, their seizures were reduced quite considerably. And so there's a lot of excitement in the field that perhaps this product will be approved by the FDA. The FDA is currently reviewing it for approval. And we should hear later this year whether or not they're going to go ahead and approve it for children with epilepsy. And so that will be, you know, a very exciting development if that come, if that proves to be safe and efficacious. And certainly the FDA has access to more information than we in the product board do. So we're limited by what's been published in the medical literature, and whereas the FDA has, you know, big files that they review on toxicology, looking at drug-drug interactions, looking at safety profiles of compounds in their patients, make sure that there's no effect on cardiovascular health, things like that. So we don't always have access to all the same information that the FDA does. So it makes our job sometimes a little bit difficult at the CBD board, but we are doing our best to review the literature and advise the legislature about different disease states that might be treatable by currently cannabidiol. But what Representative Dawes is going to be doing is introducing legislation this session to actually expand our scope so that we can look at many different combinations of THC to cannabidiol.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what your research here in the lab has found. Have you been able to draw any lines from CBD oil to diminished instances of seizures?
Actually, yes. So we run a program here. We are the contract site for the Epilepsy Therapy Screening Program, which is an NIH-funded initiative. And we have looked at CBD, or cannabidiol, and it's an ability to mitigate seizures in preclinical models that we use in our laboratory. And we found that to be efficacious, actually, and at doses that do not cause adverse effects in our experiments.
So in your experiments, that's like before bringing it to a human population.
That's correct.
Population,
that's right. So when we do preclinical studies, that suggests that is before you go to the clinic. And you want to make sure that drugs are safe and efficacious before we bring them to the patient.
Right. That kind of takes me to something that happened in 2014 when Utah put into place the Hemp Extract Registration Act, mm-hmm. which allows Utahns to obtain cannabis oil as a treatment for epilepsy.
Yeah.
All of these people using CBD oil prescribed by their doctors, has that impacted your research at all?
I think it's really helped to focus our research on trying to understand the effects of CBD and other extracts from the marijuana plant on seizure activity and basic mechanisms of epilepsy. Absolutely. I think what is a bit of a concern is that doctors can't actually prescribe it. Mm. And so patients don't really know how much to give to their children to help with the seizures. Also, accessing it is difficult. And knowing that you're getting the same product every time with the same amounts of CBD in it proves challenging.
So where are they getting this from? I mean, I guess that might be the big question.
I think that is a question I don't have the answer for. My guess is surrounding states, but I don't know the answer to that.
But all the same,
it's
unregulated then, and that makes it difficult to know what you're getting.
That's correct. And I think that's one of the many concerns that scientists and clinicians have about medical marijuana as it stands today. There are not a lot of safety measures put into place to know that your marijuana that you're getting is grown in soil that's not contaminated, or maybe doesn't have a mold or other sort of contaminant in it, or knowing, for example, that it has the same levels of THC batch to batch to batch to batch. Those regulations and oversight and good chemical practices are not being implemented. It's how we know that when we take a given drug that we get the right dose, you know, the right time, and it's always the same because of the way it's been manufactured. And those manufacturing safety regulations aren't really in place at this point. It's a little bit unregulated.
So we've talked a bit about medical marijuana in the context of epilepsy, but do you know anything about its efficacy in, I don't know, something like pain management, especially mm-hmm. now? I mean, we're in the middle of the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. People are looking for alternatives to pain management. Do you know anything about that?
Well, that's outside of my scientific expertise, although I can tell you that the National Academies of Science, Medicine, and Engineering looked at pain specifically and felt that there is evidence to suggest that oral cannabinoids can mitigate pain in some situations. But I think, again, it will really revert back to having those good clinical trials that are double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trials to understand whether or not what combinations of different extracts might be efficacious for those patients.
I'm going to ask you to maybe get a little political. Not a lot, but as a...
Careful what you ask for.
Hey, you take this wherever you want to take it. But as a scientist who is doing research into this topic, into this illegal substance, and we know that people are going to try it anyway, going to see if this is something that works for them, would it be beneficial for you and for them if marijuana was just made legal? From a science perspective, would it make your job easier?
I think from a science perspective, if marijuana was legalized and descheduled, it would certainly make our life easier in trying to do the studies properly. As I mentioned, the regulatory landscape is quite complicated to navigate through in order to get THC or CBD from the National Institutes of Health. It's available. We can do those studies. It's not impossible. And in fact, we do it in my laboratory in a very feasible way, but it does take time and effort and cost money to go through those bureaucratic hoops, if you will. So certainly if marijuana was made legal, it would be easier to do. But I think the question we have to look at from a scientific perspective is when we do experiments, we want to know that what we're using is the same thing from trial to trial to trial. And so we need to have some assurance that, some quality assurance and quality control that, again, the products that we would be testing are the same potency, the same ratio of THC to other active ingredients of the marijuana plant in order to make sure that our studies are valid and reproducible and rigorous. And so, you know, to eliminate some of the bureaucratic hoops would be terrific. And I think that would make our jobs as scientists a lot easier. I think when you look at the marijuana landscape, what you also see is that there are a wide variety of strains. There are a wide variety of potencies. There are a vast array of different types available. And so that makes our job as a scientist a little bit trickier because whenever you change batch to batch and lot to lot, the relationships of THC to CBD, your outcomes could be very different.
So do you foresee, we've got a ballot initiative this year trying to make medical marijuana accessible to everyone here in Utah. Also, just kind of across the nation, the approval of medical marijuana and even recreational marijuana is growing. Do you think that we can maybe in the foreseeable future, expect medical marijuana to come into the mainstream of treatments?
You know, I think as scientists, we welcome new information. And the more information we can get regarding safety, efficacy, and importantly also drug-drug interactions that can occur with long-term use, I think that's something that as pharmacologists, we're very careful about. Because whenever you take a neuroactive substance for a long period of time, it can, depending on how it's metabolized and how the body dispenses with that drug, can interact with other drugs that patients might otherwise be on. And that could be dangerous, for example. There could be dangerous drug-drug interactions that we're unaware of that we don't want to stumble upon accidentally because there's wide access. There's a lot of aspects to it. Socially, there's a lot of aspects. You know, certainly, you know, we know that the developing brain exposed to marijuana can cause long-term changes in the brain that can happen, you know, when teenagers, for example, experiment with drug use, and they're much more likely to go on to develop addictions later on in life. And so we want to be very careful, I think, before we move too quickly.
Karen Wilcox, professor and chair of pharmacology and toxicology at the University of Utah. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
If you had a qualifying illness under the Medical Cannabis Ballot Initiative, would you try a marijuana product as treatment? Tell us at our Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.